Hello, and welcome to the Property Solopreneur podcast, a show for property investors and developers who want to build and grow their own profitable businesses. I'm sharing with you my decades of property experience and interviewing many other successful property people who are happy to share their varied and priceless knowledge freely. Business doesn't need to be hard, and nor do you need to be lucky. But as a certified strategist, I know you need a plan to work to. And a good start is by listening to other people's successes and failures. Why reinvent the wheel? This allows us to have a more in-depth knowledge of the wider property world. Welcome to this week's episode of the Property Solopreneur. And it's a very special one this week for me because it's my 100th episode. For the last 100 weeks, continually, I have delivered a podcast on property every morning at 9 o'clock. Now, I love podcasting. I was told years ago that I've got the perfect face for radio, and talking into a mic with or without a guest is a happy place for me. But podcasting is like property. It doesn't happen by accident. Every episode has to be planned, recorded in good time for the production team. And thanks to everyone from the influential audio team who work behind the scenes to take my recordings and turn them into something that they then publish for me. I take great care in selecting the guests I know will give value to everybody listening. And thank you for your feedback. It really makes a difference. For instance, Desmond Burks emailed me from Norfolk to say he listens because he feels he can relate to the stories that I use, the experiences that I've had, and the guests' property journeys. Information like that makes my life so much easier when choosing future guests. Potential guests are often suggested to me, or sometimes they even flag themselves up by sending me an email. And I then have a very happy time following them on social media if I've not already met them, going to see them talk, or watching hours of YouTube to make sure that they're on the same wavelength as both you and me, and that the nuggets they can give us will make a difference. Some are well-known names. Others, however, are not. They're successful, but they're not out there speaking. And because they're successful doing their own thing, I want them to inspire and educate us in whatever it is they're doing. And it may interest you to learn that these totally unknown people who are just out there doing their own thing very successfully in property often get much bigger downloads than the famous people that I've interviewed, the ones that are all over the property world. Now, I'm a certified business strategist as well as a small business mentor specialising in property, funnily enough, for the government Help to Grow scheme. I help property people to focus on the business as well as the property to ensure that they plan, build and then deliver a profitable, sustainable property company that delivers their dreams. That is what I do. Now, it may not seem to be as exciting or as sexy to learn about how to make your business work, you know, all that profit and loss, you know, cash flow, legalities and everything else, the money side of property. But it is absolutely vital to concentrate on that, to build your future on rock rather than sand. And it was because of that that I am so delighted that Jackie Toombs, founder and CEO of Toombs Homes and the property strategist, was able to come and join and talk to me for this 100th edition about just that. Property strategy, property business, planning and delivering correctly. Welcome, Jackie. How marvellous. You must be the first guest I've had who is clearly living the life they want to lead rather than hoping at some point they're going to it, because this is a podcast. What people can't see is that you're actually in your camper van, and I know you're in a vineyard. And what kind of idyllic life is that? But before we get into all of that, you know, who are you and what do you do?
Oh, well, thank you so much for having me on, Rachel. It's really looking forward to our conversation today. So yeah, I'm Jackie Toombs. First and foremost, I run a property investment company. We work with investors to build portfolios and we focus on buying blocks of flats on the outskirts of Kent. And we do buy, refurbish, refinance, long-term portfolio building and holding. So that's where it's all started. But then that's kind of from there grown into what's really a much, probably I would say, bigger passion of mine, which is helping others. And so we work with experienced investors to help them to scale up and do more deals by working with investors and making sure their property businesses ultimately serve the reason why they started in the first place, so they can do more deals, but create themselves more time to live a great life along the way. So yeah, it's the juggling the two sides for me.
Yeah, that's very important for you, because it's very rare when you go and watch somebody speak to realise that, yeah, they're doing property, but they're also living the life they want to lead. And that was one of the reasons I was so keen to have you on today. Not only that, but you are also a business strategist. I'm a certified business strategy lover, and I work particularly with property people. So do you. And this is my 100th podcast. And I just thought,
congratulations, Rachel.
Thank you. I just thought, what a sort of symbiotic moment to be able to do that. And one of the reasons, again, I wanted you on is that you very much started off like everybody else, just wanting one property. Can I do it? Didn't you? And I know that it was, in fact, funny enough, we paid almost the same money for our first properties, although in different places. And that was a little tiny property, wasn't it, in Southeast London?
Yes, absolutely. £108,500, completed on the 25th of July, 2014. Spent about £7,500 on the refurb, put as much on a credit card as I could to get it all done. And yeah, it was just penny pinching and saving to make it all happen. And yeah, it was so funny. When we were doing the first refurb, it was like so full on. I was working full time in market research. Dave, my husband and business partner, who's now fully side by side with me at that point, he was the support. And he was like really supporting me through everything. He was coming in and the refurb, putting on door handles and stuff, just like trying to make it as cheap as possible.
Yeah, all the little things.
All the little things. I remember we like drove away from the property. It had been so insane, like maybe like 6 weeks of craziness doing the refurb, getting it all sorted. And like we closed the door on the refurb, the tenant had moved in and we drove down the road. It's in Erith in Southeast London. We probably got about 3 minutes from the property. And I turned to Dave and I said, Dave, I reckon we could do more than one of these in a year. And he pretty much like emergency stopped on the brake. And he looked at me with like these dagger eyes. He was like, what the are you talking about? I don't think so. Let's just stop and think about this, was his reaction at that point. So yeah, we've come a long way from there.
Absolutely. And it's when you start, that first one is so vital. You've got to get past the first one, haven't you? And then you see it start to work. And then you do another one and another one, and it starts to grow. But at what point did you think, hang on a second, this is a full-time, we can move into this full-time rather than just having a side hustle, as they call it, don't they?
Yeah, it was, I don't know how, you end up on all these databases, don't you, when you start like investing in property, you're learning stuff, you're signing up to stuff. I don't know how I ended up on a webinar with Rob Moore talking about property. And like he was a very big influence, basically. It was him talking about how you could go from just doing, you know, a couple to doing many and like working with investors. And just he's such an amazing public speaker. And he just made me believe that I could do it and I could do more. And he just took my vision from being like, you know, I could buy one of these a year over the next 5 years to going, oh my God, I could do like 10 of these in a year. And then maybe that would be like 50 in like 5 years. And it just made me just go to a whole different level of, I guess, self-belief. It was him and the impact that he had on me that made me go, I can do so much more, which then inspired. That was not long after that first property, like a few months afterwards, which I think was important because I'd kind of done the first property and I'd everything that I heard Rob Moore talk about, I was like, yeah, that has been my experience with this property. Like he had that credibility with me because I'd seen it firsthand. And so I kind of had that belief in what he was talking about from how you could go from there. And so, yeah, we just kind of like then just went for it and still like was working full time for another maybe a year after that, actually, to actually make it happen. It was like the most wonderful and the most hideous year all at the same time to go from doing. It took me 18 months from the moment of deciding to invest in property to getting the first property. And then it was about from that moment of completion to the like the next 10 was maybe like another 12, 15 months, something like that. It was like quite substantial growth after that. And then, yeah, the whole self-belief change.
Yes, because that is something people forget, that it's like taking an exam, actually. It's the work you do up front that makes the difference to the product, doesn't it? So, you know, people find property and they immediately go, yeah, I get it, right. I want to buy my first one now. And they don't realise, actually, you've got learning to do. You've got to work out what you want to do, where you want to do it and everything else. And you definitely scaled up. But before we do that, you just mentioned en passant that you work with your husband. Now, for those who are listening to that and going, oh, I couldn't do that. I mean, I do, but we work side by side, but we do actually have different businesses in the same place. What are the tips for working with your nearest and dearest?
I think it's been actually really good for, obviously for the business, but it's been really good for our relationship actually working together because it's forced us to understand each other on a deeper level that I think you would probably get away with not knowing in a normal relationship. So for us, a real game-changing moment was when we first took the Wealth Dynamics profiling test.
Oh, well, yes.
And so those listeners who maybe haven't heard of that, it's a personality profiling tool. It basically puts you into one of 8 different personality profiles. But what I really like about it in particular is like it's kind of like a little graph that it gives you to show you how you rank against all of the 8 different profiles. So it's not just that you're one, it shows you how you are on all of them, which means it's quite unique, actually, the kind of output that you get from it. And at first, you won't necessarily understand what that all means. But we've worked with it a lot to understand it for each other. We've then used it for our team. I then work, any mentoring clients that I've got, I use it with those as well. So I've got really in depth with it now. But at first, when we got it, if you get a profile that's more towards the top of the chart, it's kind of like a little square, more towards the top of the chart, you're better at like starting stuff, creating things. If you're more left-hand side, you are more process-oriented, systems-driven. Towards the bottom, you're better at like timing, project management, bringing things together. And on the right-hand side, you're more people-focused. That's like very high-level overview. So when we did this test, I thought that I was going to come out as being like the systems person. I've always been very organized and methodical, good at tidying things up. And Dave, he was a professional musician. So we're like, oh, he's very creative. So he'll probably be what they call the creator. So we took this test and we did it at the same time. And when we got the results, our result came out completely the wrong way around. So I came out as the creator and Dave came out as the systems person. Like I am very naturally hot-headed by nature. I've kind of got under control a bit now. But at that point, I was like, wanted to throw the computer at the wall. I was like, they've messed it up. They've got the things the wrong way around. They've sent us the wrong one. Anyway, I subsequently realized that that wasn't the case, that actually it did make sense. And so what we kind of learned from that was, Dave actually, he's a classical musician. Classical music, it is a system. It's about taking notes and making them work as best as you can. But there's very much a process behind it. So actually that kind of made sense for Dave to be more on that side. And for me, I'm the distracted one by nature. I'm the one who wants to start the new thing. Like that is the creator. You're good at like getting stuff off the ground. But once it's off the ground, you're a little bit bored and you want to move on to the next thing. And so just that understanding between the two of us started to shift everything in terms of how we were setting up our roles. So it went from, we were kind of at the point that Dave was being in charge of finding properties and I was in charge of finding investors, but it wasn't quite working. Like it was a bit clunky. And yeah. What we realized from that was it made more sense for me to be in the upfront part of finding deals and finding investors, because it's creating at that point.
Yes.
You're creating the opportunity, you're creating the relationship. Once I've done that and I've kind of gone out into the world and I've identified things that might work and I've brought them towards us, like that ongoing bit to take something from that to a completion, to a result, I was out of my flow and it was wearing me out. So we shifted it. So Dave did the like, it was really more marketing versus sales. So I was better at being out there finding stuff and he was better at the conversion process essentially of sales. And like that was a very big shift that we didn't really hear anyone else talking about in that way. And obviously many other decisions have come off the back of it. But just that understanding about who is good at what and keeping on leaning into that. And also the opposite side of it, the fact that therefore Jackie will be rubbish at finishing and Dave will be rubbish at starting, and like loving each other for that rather than trying to make each other good at everything, lean into stuff to be even better at it and let go of the stuff and get even worse at it. That's probably the biggest learning, I would say.
Yes, you don't need two of both of you.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, I'm a star creator married to a lord. Absolutely get that. So, but it is something that many people don't realize, that if you are running a business with your nearest and dearest, you can't both do the same things and you can't both expect to be as, you know, just because you find something easy doesn't mean to say they will, or even have the same belief in it when they go forward, which is really, really important. So you definitely are the front of the business and you go and find new deals and new investors. And that investors has made such a difference to you, hasn't it? Because I know you've raised quite a large amount of money. I think something like 4.2 million.
It's just, it's like always trying to keep it updated. I think it's like nearer towards six now at this point, but you know, a large amount of money.
But the reason why I mention that is because that amount of money is completely dwarfed by what it can do to you, isn't it? Everyone always thinks I've got to have huge amounts of investor funds to do a lot with. But you've actually created, with just that sum, you created three times as much value for your own portfolio. And that's when you scale it like that, that's when you realise how important investor funding is.
Absolutely. And I also think that we're really just getting started, right? Like a lot of those funds, like they're in the process. And I think at first they are less efficient than they are as time goes along. So yeah, like really, we are just laying the foundations for like the next round of stuff to be able to happen again. So yeah, that's just the like where we are at this moment in time, but much more to come from those two. So yeah, it's the ability to use those funds from investors, working with more corporate finance, like mortgage lending alongside of that, to just get the maximal return on investment, which is great, obviously, for serving our investors as well. But then also, you know, on our side, builds the portfolio as quickly as we have done.
Yeah, and gives you the life you want. But when the most frustrating thing, I think, for most people who are just starting out with investors, and you're clearly very successful in them, is people don't walk around with a large sign on saying, I'm an investor in property. Please come and speak to me. You know, it is, you have to do the boring networking, don't you? And it, yes, it's actually fun, but you have to follow up. What do you think, why have you become so successful at attracting funding?
I think it's a combination, you know. I think it's the attracting, but also that more, you know, that pipeline conversion process. I do really think it's the combination of those two things. Because I think a lot of us have a lot of potential funding around us, but how do you get it from just being there to being an actual reality in a deal? And I actually think that's more the struggle that people have, not that they necessarily know it at that point. So I think from an attracting point of view, I think it's just being consistently out there and consistently saying what you do and how it helps other people. And I think it's very easy to be out there saying, well, for one, it's easy to be out there not even saying that you invest in property. And if no one knows what you do, they're definitely not going to get anyone to invest. Number two, you say, I invest in property. And then everyone thinks you have your money bags and you don't need anyone else's money. Also not helpful. So option number three has to be you tell people what you do and you tell them how you help other people to get involved in what you do. And I just got very good at just saying that in conversation with everyone. Anywhere I would go, if I was at a coffee shop and someone asked me, the barista asked me what I do, I would say that I invest in property and I help other people who don't have the time to invest in property and get a better return on their money. And I would tell taxi drivers, I would say at networking events, I would tell everyone that one-liner. And, you know, probably 80% of the time people go, okay, that's interesting. And that's the end of it. But 20% of the time people go, oh, really? Like, so how does that work? Or like, oh, I suppose you probably need like £10 million to invest with you. Like a few extra questions come that kind of indicate this person might be looking to get something to happen with their money. And then you kind of take the conversations further from there, which then becomes more of that pipeline process, which we can talk about if you want to. So yeah, that for me is like that, just talking about what you do and being clear that you work with others. It sounds really simple, but it works.
Absolutely. And it is the pipeline behind, because I am always amazed. So we met at a networking meeting and I was amazed at the number of people there who didn't have business cards. They were there, they'd spent it, and it was a glorious evening. So, you know, they weren't in their back gardens enjoying the sunshine. We were in a stuffy little room somewhere in deepest Suffolk. And, you know, and yet they hadn't gone prepared. There was no way of following up on them or anything else. What makes a difference? How do you get it from how do you take somebody from, hello, this is what I do, to welcome to my world and you're not going to escape. You're part of my world now.
So, yeah, I guess, again, that clarity, first of all, about what you do and being clear what you do, which is focus, which I'm sure we'll get onto in a moment.
We will. Yeah.
Yes. We spent very good money on a very nice business card. Like when we handed over our business cards, people were always like, wow, they were literally like a pound a business card, but they were like silver etching, or like they were just like a real wow factor. And that definitely, well, that made an impact. But anyway, then it would be making sure that you actually follow up with people off
that's
the back
the
of
thing. No one follows up. You know, it's quite hilarious. And one the reason why I want to say was that you are one of the few people who I have met recently who did bother to send an email. And I always now wait a week to see whether or not they're going to contact me. It's just a little interesting thing that I've met. And there it was. And I thought, aha, she does what she says she does on the tin. Which was, you know, absolutely brilliant. And of course, that is the proof of the pudding. That is why you are successful. You didn't just go for a wet Wednesday or a sunny Wednesday and just go, well, it's lovely meeting those people last night, but I'm never going to speak to them again. You followed up. And that's vital, isn't it? You follow up. And then what do you do with people?
So for us, from an investor perspective, we follow up with people. And it's our next. I'll tell you where we got to, not how it started. We can maybe talk about the lessons along the way, but let's talk where we got to. We would then follow up with someone, like an email, like you've said off the back, and just say, let's have a quick chat. Because in a networking event, this is why I go networking and my husband doesn't. I think he will talk to like two people over the course of like 2 hours. I can talk to like 20 people over the course of 2 hours. Just find as many people as possible, see where the synergy is. Don't talk in depth then. Follow up and have a quick conversation off the back to see if there is actually more synergy there. So a short conversation, which is where we would share more about like what it is that we're doing, kind of how we work with investors, find out a bit more about what they're looking for. High level fact finding on both sides. Is there something in this that we should explore further? If there is, then we would book then another conversation, which is a more in-depth conversation to understand the person. Twofold reasons for this. One is obviously you've got FCA regulation that you've got to comply with about promotions. So you cannot present someone with a deal until you actually know it's appropriate for them. So that's from the FCA side. Also, it's not great. If you send someone a deal too early, you don't know if it's the right relationship anyway. So it's an opportunity to understand them more, go through the FCA questions and just see, like, based on what they're trying to achieve, do you feel it is an appropriate investment for the two of you?
Yes.
If it then is, there's some FCA paperwork we have to do off the back of that call. And sometimes people don't go any further past that point. We've had
that's
people
good
like,
though, isn't it?
That's great. You've got to just like, you've got to just filter, you know, you just find the people who are really serious and want to carry on. So that's great. And I think that it's a great lesson actually that you just said there. Like just, it won't be everyone.
No.
You just see who carries on through and just have a staged process so that it's everyone builds their comfort levels with each other and just feels comfortable to move on if it doesn't feel right at any point. And then if once we get past that point and we've done FCAs, compliance stuff, then we start to talk about more specifics of deals, but from an example level. So like the types of deals that we do, what have we done in the past? Like how did it work? How did the money go in and out? What were the returns or the timeframes? Just like bringing it all to life. And that throws up a load of questions that you can then consider. And then if after going through all of that, again, there's still interest on both sides, then we're basically aiming towards getting what we call heads of terms, or what we call the industry calls heads of terms, like agreement for how we are going to work together before there's actually a deal on the table. So just in layman's terms, couple of sides of A4, this is the plan. Who's going to bring what? What's the time frame? What's the amount of money? Yep. What's the criteria for the deals that we're going to do together? Blah, 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 blah. And we would both sign it. And what we found is once we have that, once we started to have this process in place and we'd get people to heads of terms and we'd both sign, then we only had one person that's ever signed a heads of terms and not subsequently gone on to invest. So for us, it has been as good as the money in the bank account, really. Like it's the relationship's been built, the expectations have been set. We've got that agreement. Now we're still out there sourcing whilst this is all going on. We're not waiting for that agreement, but we're not aggressively offering on a deal until we know we have the funds at heads of terms. And once you've got the funds at heads of terms, then you can get more aggressive with the offers, safe in the knowledge that the person is there to invest. We then pull together a deal pack. We'll do pull together a deal pack, send it over to the investor. And like the expectation is that it, as long as it's met all the criteria that we've set, that's it. And you get on with it. It's just like, it's such a nice process and it works.
Absolutely. It takes all the difficulty out of it, doesn't it? On both sides. because, you know, it's given you both the opportunity to go, no, not quite the person I want to work with, because this is a financial marriage, basically, isn't it, for the duration of the deal. And, you know, you've just got to make sure it's absolutely right. Well, thank you for that, because that I think will have cleared a lot of people, because, of course, one of the things you brought out, that this is not just, you're not dealing with one person, you've got multiples of this going on, which means that when you're deal sourcing, you've got a lovely pipeline on the other side. So, you know, you can go shopping basically without worrying about the money in the bank. It's going to be there because the back room is sorting it.
Absolutely.
That's what everybody should want to have. Absolutely. Yeah. But you only got there because you focused. And I'm a great, you know, I bang on about this, and it's such a boring word for most people in property because, you know, everyone just goes, oh, property. Oh, it's my passion. Love it. And you think, no, let's be sensible. You love the results it brings you. You know, if you want to buy twee cottages, I live in a thatched house. If you want to live in something that's pretty, that's your forever home. You know, investments are often very ugly ducklings, aren't they? So focus. What does focus mean to you?
Oh, what focus means to me when it comes to investing in property is having a clear business model that you work towards for a period of time to make it work. So and I think you'll probably feel very similar to me about this, Rachel, which is probably why we're talking today. In property, they get called strategies, right? HMOs, developments, commercial conversions. Yeah, techniques. I've landed on business model for what I mean by those. Like that is what it is that you do. And then the strategy is everything else for how we make that actually work and how we make it work for you. So yes, I think we're on the same page.
We are. It's such a joy.
So yes, it's unusual to be in that situation. So this is really nice. So yeah, that is for me the first part of focus. And that's come from doing exactly the opposite of trying to do way too many things. And actually that, you know, the second year that we were in property, we did 10 deals. We completely lost our focus towards the back end of that second year. And the third year, we did one deal. So it's the difference between either you feel very excited with lots of shiny new objects and you go slow, or you are really focused, overcome the boredom, and you actually get the life that you want and you do a load of deals. So that this is as simple as that, really.
It is. You're absolutely right. That is it in a nutshell. And, you know, it isn't about being sucked into a property world where, well, today I could do a bit of serviced accommodation. Tomorrow I could do a bit of that. It is about, where do I want to be in 30 years' time? How do I get there? And of course, the other thing that no one talks about is we don't work in a vacuum. We've got this big marketplace all around us that we're going through exciting times at the moment. I went through the credit crunch. So, you know, I have done several cycles. I know just how devastating it can be. And that is one of the reasons you do need to have that business clarity, is that you've got to be aware of what's happening on the outside. And, you know, if you've got a business model, you can start to decide how much even you want to be geared up, because you will know from your clients, not everyone likes mortgages or risk or anything else. This is the kind of thing you have to get put down on paper, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think it's you're right, kind of having one eye on what's going on in the environment around you. If you've got so much different stuff going on inside your business, you just haven't got the bandwidth to be able to do that. And you also can't see with clarity where the risks are inside your business, because it's just like a swirling vortex of chaos. So yeah, it links to me very clearly, with the focus point. If you've got a clear business model, you know how it works. There's many different ways that you can structure just doing single lets. You're right. Maybe you do want to leave more cash in, or you don't want to buy with mortgages. There's so many ways to make a single let model work. There's different areas.
Yeah.
And you just won't be able to see all that granularity if you've got 3, 4, 5, 6 different versions of that going on. So for me, that streamlining about what's going on to be able to, and you can't see it at the time. You feel that by having all these different things going on, that somehow you're de-risking what you're doing. But actually you can't see the risk that you're creating just because it's so busy. But when you do select one, you're going to feel really bored and annoyed with us for a period of time, because you're these women really made it a lot more boring than it could otherwise have been. But if you go through the eye of the needle, you choose, let's say, HMOs. I'm going to focus on HMOs. You're really in love with us. You are bored for a period of time, but you keep on going. You will eventually see, once you've got through the other side, there is so much creativity to be had within just HMOs. And you will be so much more creative for useful solutions within that model than you will be when you are out wide. And it's just the other day with one of our, like, we've got a couple of deals going on and there's been a lot of shifting and changing for how we've structured it. And I came up with a completely fresh idea for how we could do something that I would never have come up with, you know, when we were back in that shiny penny overwhelm stage. And I don't know anyone else that is doing it that way, but that's only come from, like, giving myself a much smaller sandbox to operate in and then realizing that there's so many golden nuggets within it if I just trust the process.
And also, absolutely, not only trust the process, but you've got, every business must be treated as a business. Just because it's property doesn't mean it's anything. Basically, we're retailers of varying degrees, and I have a background in retail. And retailing absolutely depends on systems. You've got to have the right product at the right price in the right place, end of. And that's exactly the same for property, no matter what you're doing. And your husband has created something that will help other people do it. What, do explain it, because I was amazed, because of course, you know, this is not new to me, that I've forgotten that other people just don't see property sometimes in the same way. And he's created this system. What is it and how does it work?
So I guess it's a financial dashboard that provides cash flow forecasting and line of sight on how well the property business is operating. So it's for portfolio landlords to understand how their business is working, where it's not working from a financial perspective, and how it can be optimized to make it more profitable. And it basically came about from our business mentor back in like 2015 saying, how's your cash flow forecast looking? And us going, oh no, yeah, our cash flow from our property is like £300 per property. He's like, cash flow from your property, your cash flow forecast. And we were like, what? And so it's been a whole journey from that point of not knowing what a profit and loss was, what a cash flow forecast was, what a balance sheet was. And actually, it's really important in property. Like, we're in the business of money. I think even more important potentially than other businesses, there's just so much complexity that we're dealing with financially. And we just wanted to understand how much money was going out, how much was coming in now, how much would come in the future on the basis of all the work that we're currently doing that's not paying us back, and being able to understand where we were going to get to. And are you going to get to a point that actually, or for one, gives you what you're looking for financially? Can you afford to pay the team? Can you reinvest? When can you pay back your loans? When can you pay down your mortgages? Like, these are massive questions that we just were really struggling to get the answers to. We asked for help from our accountant. We asked for help from bookkeepers. And like, you need accountants, you need bookkeepers. These are really important people, but these guys were not the people to give us the answers. So it's been a whole journey to go through to understanding how a financial controller fits in, what the role of a financial director is, and essentially realizing that the solution that we needed in property, it wasn't there. So we've just ended up creating it. It was not the plan. We basically just wanted a really good financial management system for our own business. And it took so much work to go and do it. And then we were helping people to build their property businesses. And we were like, right, you've got to go out and you've got to set up your financial management systems. And we just watched them struggle for a couple of years and not get there because it's so complicated. So in the end, we were like, right, we just got to do it. We just got to find a way to help others to access what we're doing, because we just can't watch this struggle of others anymore. And it's actually a real passion of Dave's. So he loves doing it. We're just, what we're providing for people in terms of like the clarity on their business finances, how their personal finances fit in, their loan repayments to investors, and just bringing it down to something that is really clear and easy to understand from a financial dashboard perspective. And people are absolutely loving it. So it's a joy to watch that. It's a very small business, but it is really starting to flourish.
It is. It may be a small business, but it is something that is absolutely fundamental to property investing, because property itself is actually a tiny, tiny part of what we do. And yet, because it is an iceberg, and this is something everyone always forgets. And it is, you know, the buzzword at the moment is all about scaling and growing, you know, because that's, you know, we want to go from perhaps a 6 to a 7 to an 8 bigger business. You cannot do that unless you know your numbers, unless you know how your business works. And of course, you know, from the front of the room, always you hear the thing that if you want to scale, you've got to outsource. You've got to outsource everything. You should just be sitting in the middle like a universal spider directing traffic. That's great. I have, you know, and everyone always says, and the first thing you should delegate are your accounts. And then suddenly when you start talking to people, you realise they haven't a clue what's going on. They go, oh, the accountant does that. The accountant, some nameless person at the back. It's your business. You should be doing it. My first hiring was a cleaner and a gardener. Absolutely essential. I don't like doing either of those. And it gave me the time. What was your first outsourced hiring?
My first outsourced hiring was, it was a virtual assistant company. Gosh, I remember their name. It was, they're based in Peterborough. They were like about £30 an hour. So they weren't, it was not a cost effective hire, but it was basically just get some of my admin off my plate, basically, like booking travel or just like little things that needed to be done that I thought, if I can get someone else to do that, then I would have more time for like networking, deals, investors. So yeah, that started with like maybe like a few hours a week, 3-4 hours a week, something like that.
Yes, because it doesn't look big, does it? So, I mean, I always, my first, apart from my cleaner and my gardener, the very first property outsourcing I did was to a VA who basically answered the ad that I had in the back of the local paper, which, you know, went, do you need to sell your house? Now, I did not want to be answering the call at, you know, 10 o'clock at night on a Saturday, wherever it was. And I gave her a script and she would then send me the answers and I could then go and visit. That is a very good use of your time. And I think if you have the clarity, you can then work out what it is you're going to outsource. And the really key things I don't think people should outsource, first of all, is deal finding.
No,
it's you. Investor finding and marketing.
They are the crown jewels. That was what my mentor called them. You know, yes. Like it's the crown jewels. Don't outsource it. It's actually the highest value task in your business. So if you're going to be doing something, it's a very good use of your time. And also if you're going to outsource it, it's going to be a lot more expensive. And also you're right, as you're kind of saying, it's like it's your product and you're developing your product. That's part of the finding what your the deal sourcing and figuring out how to best make that work. And then finding clients and finding who the right people are. I think, you know, obviously, once you get to a certain point, you can outsource some or all of that process. But I agree, like, as you're making it work, just even if you don't like it, just suck it up and do it.
Yeah, it's your business. You've all got to do it. And anyone who owns their own business will realize it's not glamorous. You will be the one sweeping out the wood shavings at the end of the day, just because you're going to be absolutely all over your business, or should be, to know where everything is happening. And now you're a traveler. You every 6 weeks or so you go away for a travel, which is hence the fact you're in your camper van in the middle of France. How do you make sure that your buildings behind that you've got scattered about are actually being looked after properly? What is your thought process on finding those people
to look after the it's that combination of the right people doing the right things with the right support processes too. So for us, we split it out. So for me, stuff in the UK, it's got to be that on the ground, being at the properties, that kind of support and the administrative side of it. We do all the back office in the Philippines with our, I don't like the virtual assistant. It's more like virtual team
out in the Philippines.
Looking after that side of it. So for me, it's about like, and we can maybe talk about values, like being really clear about what the values are.
Values. Oh, don't get me started. They're vital. How can you attract people if they don't know what you stand for? And how can you run a business unless you know what you want to find in other people? So yes, values, really, really important. What are the values you're looking out for in people who work with you?
Yeah, so for us, there's like, we have like a like five key values that we work to, including like problem solving and what that means to us, supportive, being tenacious, being trustworthy. And like these are really important things to us. And those words mean different things to different people. So we have our own like a definition for what each of those things mean. And when we're trying to find someone, we are doing our best during the hiring process to assess someone against those values. It's imperfect. It's definitely an art, not a science.
Yeah.
And I think, so we will, like the last stage of our interview process, we will always have a few of us, kind of like a Dragon's Den style, that final interview stage where you go through a few different people and they kind of like grill you on a different area. So each person will have a value each to kind of ask questions around. And at the end of that interview, we need to feel like the person ranks 5 out of 5 against all those values. Because if they're a 4 out of 5, they're actually in reality a 3 out of 5. If they're a 5 out of 5, they may well be a 4 out of 5. So like, you've got to feel like they are bang on values at that point, because it's not going to get better than that at that point in our experience. And then once you get into that initial, you know, if you do make the offer, you do think they're the right fit, just if someone doesn't fit the values, they first of all got to know that those values are of, that they are the highest importance to us and the business. So the person needs to understand that. And then we have to train that. So if someone isn't living by the values, we'll explain to them why that is, let them know, and give them opportunity to change, to like evolve and deliver on that. It's not always possible. So therefore, it's ability to just let go if it's not the right fit, and to let go as quickly as possible. Like, it's part of getting to know people.
That is the possibly the most vital bit, and the bit that people completely miss. They've outsourced, that's it. You know, the lid is closed, forgotten about. Whereas this is an ongoing process. You're clearly monitoring. And if it doesn't work, it's okay. Goodbye, start again.
Yeah.
Because it's your business and your business has to work. Your business is not to support somebody else be rubbish at whatever it is you want them to do.
Yeah. And it's so hard to find that balance between the two, because, like, you know, be supportive is one of our values. So we want to support people. But what is that right balance of support versus the other person also supporting you? So it's got to, like, it's got, there's got to be that balance of give and take and supporting, you know, the, I say us, I mean like the company. And so it is, you definitely, you won't get it perfect, but just as long as you just keep iterating and get better every single time.
Part of your job as a CEO, as the owner of business, is to keep an eye on all the different bits and work out what's not working and then go in and sort it. Now you've got your business, it's up and running, it's doing amazing things. What are you going to be doing later on? Because, you know, when you get to your 60s, are you still going to be living the nomad life, buying and selling, or are you going to be doing something else?
I think by nature, I'm a natural planner. Like, I've always planned everything. It's one of the reasons that strategy, like, really appealed to me. I was like, wow, I could, like, help people do what I love to do and, like, make money from it. So that was, like, very exciting. So I've always planned everything. I've always been very clear about exactly where I'm heading and how I'm going to get there. And I have started to realize in recent years that every upside has a downside, right? Like, I have planned too much, exactly what I want from everything. And it doesn't allow a lot of space for the unexpected. And I think quite often the unexpected, there can be, I'm learning, there can be a lot of joy in terms of where things can go. So I read an amazing book last year called The Surrender Experiment by a guy called Michael Singer. And he tells the story of how he basically developed a way of being that was completely opposite to mine, where he would just see what life presented him and he would just go with it and see where it took him. And it's an incredible story of where it takes him to achieving the most incredible things. And one of the other things I have learned is that life is a bit like a pendulum. If you have been very extreme in one direction, in order to come to a more balanced place, you have to swing to completely the other end of the spectrum. So I've gone from very planned. I am now testing the Michael Singer approach of not planning everything, which is part of one of the reasons the motorhome has been so powerful for us, because it's made me go, stop planning. Like, I don't know where we're going to park up tonight, where we're going to stay, or what we're going to do next. And just embracing the uncomfortableness that has come up for me as part of that. Now, I don't want to be ultimately that far over. There's definitely a middle ground. But I know that in order to find that middle ground, I've got to just see the extreme on the other side. So I am practicing the art of just seeing what life is presenting to me and exploring whatever comes up. Now, I know that, like, we love traveling. I know that I want there to be a lot of traveling. I know there's going to be some stunning houses in some beautiful locations in the French Alps, probably on the south of France as well. Like, I know that these things are going to feature there. I know that I want to stand on some big stages and inspire a lot of people. Like, I know that these things feature, but I don't know exactly how they're going to happen. I don't know how exactly they're going to look, but I'm just, like, trusting more that I'm in the right environment. I'm doing the right things. I've just got to have a fun time doing all of that, and life will just find the way for me more. So it's probably not the answer that you exactly,
I knew I wanted a house in France, and we bought one. I know we knew we were coming back eventually to our family farm in Suffolk. So, you know, that was all planned for. We knew where our children were going to go and what they're doing, all the rest of it. But that was where I knew I would end up when I first started in property, and we are there, which is always rather good. You know, I know this stuff works because I've done it and I can prove it. But of course, you always get to somewhere slightly different because, you know, when you've got to the end, you go, right, well, I've ticked that off my list. Now what can I do? And that's the fun of life, isn't it? There can be nothing more boring than getting to the end and going, well, I did nothing really. I just went to a few networking meetings, but I never quite dared take the plunge. You've got to make a decision then and go for it.
You get to the end result, which is kind of like when we first ever wrote our strategy, we wrote down what we wanted, like our 10-year plan, like we have it. Like this is it. We're like more than what we had hoped for, we created. So it definitely works.
Oh, yes.
But what I would say is it could have been a lot more fun. Like we could have had more joy along the way of doing it. But like how I have done stuff, it wasn't not so much what I've done, but the kind of volition and the intention behind it has been from quite a negative place within me. And actually I could have just had fun and like laughed my way through it and not taken myself so seriously and not beaten myself up when we failed along the way. And actually I'd maybe be even in a better place than we are now. Or I'd be in the same place, but having had way more fun doing it. And I think that's what if I could go back, that's all I would change. Like the plan was good, but I just needed to stop being so serious about the plan and just have fun and just accept that when things feel, the worst moments for us have felt so stressful and so uncomfortable. But if I'd have realized in that moment that those were going to be the making of us. Like that's when you get thrown into the fire and stuff gets destroyed and you start afresh and you come out a whole new version of yourself. Like I wouldn't be here with that kind of perspective on life, feeling so much happier about everything that's going on had it not been for those tough times, and having that perspective through the process to go, this is what I'm going to go through right now. This is going to lead me to the place that the learnings that I need and the place that I need to get to.
And it's the understanding that, you know, if you're going to have business for yourself and property, which, as you say, it is also a money business, you've got to expect that you will have awkward and difficult and sleepless nights. It's a given, isn't it? And not to beat yourself up, actually, because, again, you know, we can have the perfect deal, but the market then makes it go bad. And, you know, that is the thing. You've just got to be able to go back. And one of the questions I was going to ask you is, you know, what would you say to your former self? And I think that the answer is have more fun doing it. A lot of people always laugh and say, why do you always go, well, that was great. That was fun. I think fun is one of the most important drivers that we all need to have. Otherwise, what is the point in doing
it? What's the point? What is the point? Exactly.
Absolutely. But strategy is definitely something that we both have in common, we both love. And, you know, what is the one piece of advice you would give to someone just starting out in property now, whose head is filled with just, you know, property is going to make you a multimillionaire overnight?
It's again, it's that choose. I guess there's two parts to it. First one is all of these different strategies, what I would call business models. I think you said you would call like techniques or tools. They are all great and all rubbish. Like there is no perfect answer. Like they are, they all have upsides and downsides. Just lay them all out, what you're considering, weigh up the pros and cons, factor in there your resources, knowledge and experience. And to the best of your ability in that moment, just pick one and just stick with it. It's like, it's no more complicated than that. And just keep going with that and overcome the challenges that come up. Now, what often happens, people go, I want to have a portfolio of HMOs. Like, that's what I'm wanting. Then they're like, but I don't have the money. So therefore, maybe I should actually do rent to rent. So for me, I'd actually go, but okay, so you don't have the money. So figure out how to raise finance to build the portfolio. Yeah. Don't change the model. Solve the actual problem to do with making that model happen. And if you can just keep doing that time after time, rather than using it as an opportunity to flip, just keep doing that. It works. Just find that model and stick to it and know that you're going to have to stick with it longer than you want to, but know that if you want a business that pays you and serves you, not another job, you've got to stick with one thing for long enough so that you have the opportunity to put the systems and team in place to free you for the next thing.
Yes, absolutely. And yes, property is a marvelous thing, but it doesn't happen by accident. Anyone who is successful has been, you know, has spent hours working out how to do it. It wasn't a case of just walking into the first, you know, as I always say, I walked into the first estate agent and said, when I was buying my first house, and said, hello, I've come to buy an investment property. I saw one property and I bought it.
Time of decision making.
I'm an early adopter. Luckily, it all worked well. But, you know, that is absolutely vital. It is going to take longer than you think whilst you're in it. But when you look back over the years, it took you far shorter time than you can possibly imagine. When you look at what you're sitting on now to that first 100 and what was it?
108 and a half.
Absolutely. And how difficult was it getting that 108 and a half?
Oh, God, it was so hard. It was so stressful.
So stressful. And how hard is it to find a million now?
Yeah, it's simple now.
Yeah. Well, that says it all. And what a wonderful place to end our conversation. You know, difficult to find 100,000, easy to find a million. Gosh, there's a lot of stuff in the middle of it that you have to do. But Jackie, thank you so much for coming on to this morning and recording my 100th podcast. I've so enjoyed it.
Thank you.
And sure. I don't think anyone, no matter how many of these I do, will be recording from a vineyard. So that
would... Oh, you've laid down the gauntlet there. Let's see who it's going to be. I'm ready. Come on, come and take the spot.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rachel.
Jackie and Dave are successful for a reason. They are focused and systemised. They've got a plan. And they've continued to deliver whatever is needed. But at the same time, they're living the dream. Fun. Fun was mentioned more than once. And it's proof that a property business can be what you plan and build it to be. You don't have to have a big, shiny office. A computer is absolutely essential, of course, and an internet signal. But you can build everything else from there, wherever you are. Now, their many contact details were too numerous to mention on air, but they're all in the show notes. Go and look up their financial dashboard as well, the one that we were talking about. Are you monitoring everything in your business that you should be? Oh, and Jackie's just launched her podcast. It's called Property Lifestyle Mastery. Go and have a listen. Thank you for listening to The Property Solopreneur with me, Rachel Troughton. If you've enjoyed this episode, do hit subscribe and kindly leave a review and share this podcast with anyone you think it would help on their property journey. If you'd like to get hold of my guide for building a successful property business, go to racheltroughton.com/checklist. We only live one life, so let's get your dream a reality through building a profitable property business.